Well, we're going to continue with the issue of that God told Abraham that the nation that enslaved them, God would judge. So the basic question is, given that God was telling Abraham what was going to happen, again, I say in a loose sense, it seems that this was something which had to happen, which was a decree. It seems. And if that's the case, obviously there's a need to tell Abraham that God is going to judge them. Generally, you could ask that question. What does that have to do with the promise that God is making to Abraham? Because the essence seems to be that the Jews will be enslaved and that they'll be redeemed. And as we said, there's two other pieces of information. One is the fact that God will judge the Mitzrayim, and that seems to be separate. That's a separate point. Whether God will judge the Egyptians or won't judge the Egyptians, or fans, seems to be separate. What does have to do with the essence seems to be what's going to happen with the descendants of Abraham. But aside from that, once it's in there, it raises the question, are they guilty? Are the Egyptians guilty? Obviously, that's one of the points that's being made about the justice factor being brought. That could be the reason why it's included in there. To teach us something about the idea of bechira, of judgment, in spite of the fact that apparently it's the will of God that this should happen, and the Egyptians are going to be carrying out something which is the will of God, still they're going to be punished. The other piece of information is that afterwards they will leave Berchosh Gadol, that the Jews will leave with great wealth, which again is more connected, it seems, to the story. It's part of the story, but the question over there is, what is the significance? Why is that significant? And the Rambam talks about this issue of Dan Anochi, that God is going to judge the Egyptians. That is in Hilchos Teshuvah, at the end of Perek Vav. And the Rambam has just spent an entire chapter emphasizing that the idea of Bechira, free will, is a foundation, the Yisod HaTorah, foundation of foundations. And if a person denies free will, he's denying to the Torah, called the Torah Kul. Because it's all premised on the fact that man has the ability to choose. If you don't have that idea, if you don't believe that, if you believe in predestination or predetermination or the way a person is structured, whether it's a constitutional phenomenon, that people are evil by nature and there's no way that they can change their character, then you're negating, you're throwing out the entire Torah. Because the Torah believes that man can and should perfect himself. He has the ability to control his instincts, and that's why he has a system of Torah, mitzvos, commandments. And of course he sins, he makes mistakes, but then there's tshuva. And there's reward and punishment. All these things are possible only if man has choice. But then the Rambam in Halakha Hay takes up a set of issues and questions that a person might raise from the Torah itself. Certain passages would seem to contradict the principle. And he says, V'alokasu b'Torah, it's written in the Torah, v'avodum v'inuosam. This is a reference to the Bris Ben Absarim, that they will enslave them and afflict them. Thus, it would seem from a simple reading of the pasuk that God decreed on the Egyptians to do evil. You learn a lot from this. Today, everybody, no matter what his position is, he always quotes pasukim. The fact that you have a pasuk which superficially may or may not support a position is not the approach. You have to analyze an area and get an understanding of it, and then you have to know how to approach the psukkim and how to interpret the psukkim properly. So here the Rambam is going through psukkim, which seem to contradict the principle, but that's not the end of the story. You have to learn them in depth. So he's acknowledging, he's raising another question that a person might say, simple reading, that God God is decreeing that this should happen. Uchsiv, it also says, V'kama am hazeh, V'zona acharei Elohei neichar haaretz. That's what Moshe is telling the people, but that's based on Nevuah. He's not just making it up. It's Nevuah. That after Moshe is saying, he knows that after the Jews, after they experience the death of Moshe, after certain historical experiences, that the nation will arise. And Znus, it's interesting, it's talking about idolatry, which seems to be a religious aberration. But it doesn't seem to be a sexual aberration. But the term for sexual lusting is znus, vizona. The term znus is applied to idolatry, which teaches us a very important idea that it's a lusting. It's an instinctual lusting, a desire for satisfaction and gratification of the instinct apart from any rational consideration. Just like znus is. Znus is a lusting, where a person has a very powerful instinct, which the Torah doesn't condemn the instinct per se, but it demands that it be satisfied with intelligence and rationality and a proper framework. And the person just knocks off the framework and goes lusting after something, where the very lusting itself determines what he's going to be doing, like an animal. And that's the same thing with idolatry. The Torah has got to point to a certain religious instinct, a religious emotion in man, which has a purpose. But the purpose is to activate him on a search for the truth, so that that emotion in and of itself is not condemned, provided that it's gratified through a system of truth, objective reality, that's supposed to lead you to a discovery of the true God and how to serve God. But that's a lost thing. It's when you negate that and you just let the instinct, the power of the instinct determines the outcome, so then it leads you straight to idolatry. Because idolatry is a system of religiosity, which is, the whole purpose is to gratify human emotion. Man's emotional need, the religious emotional need. So it's identical to znus. It's a perfect term. And in a certain sense, we could say that an idol worshiper is an adulterer in the realm of the religious instinct. So what's the problem with this? Harei gozer al Yisrael. Lavokum. Thus it seems that he's decreeing upon the Jews to worship idols. Well, actually, literally, he's not decreeing, he's simply saying that he knows it's going to happen. So if he knows it's going to happen, apparently it has to happen. So if it has to happen, apparently it was decreed. And why should he punish them? You see, the question, I got up faced with justice to punish someone for doing something which he has no control over. If you assume that a person had no control over it, then it would be a complete injustice to punish the person. And the Rambam proceeds to answer both questions. So he proceeds to answer, first he takes up the issue of idolatry, that Moshe is saying that he knows that the time will come and they'll worship idols. It's because he did not decree on a particular individual, Sheyahu Hazona, that he would be the adulterer, the idol worshiper. There was no decree that a particular individual would worship idols. But each and every one of those who lusted after idols, if he didn't want to worship, he wouldn't do so, which is to say that each and every one of them had free will and made the choice. And the Creator only informed us the nature of the situation. What is this akin to? To one who says, this nation will have within it righteous people and wicked people. So a person makes a prediction based upon his knowledge that this is what's going to happen. There's going to be criminals. It's similar to that, he says. Lomav Deizeh Yomah Russia. It's not because of this that the Russia can say Kfar Nigzer Lov, that it's already been decreed upon from Shehiya Russia. Because God informed Moshe to you Rishayim in Israel, that there would be Rishayim in Israel. It's similar to what it says, Kilo Yechtal Evyon, be careful for it. That there will never be a time when there won't be a poor person in the land. That's what the pasuk says. They will never cease the presence of poor. Does that, that you can say, okay, so therefore God's going to see to it that there will be poor people. That's one thing. That would indicate that there's a decree. And those poor people will have no choice. Well, no. God knows the situation. God knows the reality, all the realities, and the way human society is structured. It's an interesting point. Again, there's a lot of side points over here. That no matter what system you have, you can have a better economy, a worse economy, you can have improvement, you can have progress today. But the idea of eliminating poverty completely, it's something which is built into the human situation. And that will always be an aim. I don't know if this is a reference to Yimos HaMashiach, which is a different situation. So we'll leave that out of the picture. But the world as we know it, the current structure of society, Kilo Yechtal Evyon Mikarev Haaretz. But does that mean that God has brought about that fact, the fact that this person got out of the decree, that a certain individual is going to be an Ani, in order to, and that's what this is based upon? Is God saying, I'm going to see to it that the certain people will be able to make a living? No. There's always there's freedom. Not that God decreed that this particular person should have this faith. It's part of the human situation. I'm in the realm of saying over here that he's not making a point about another, that it's his fault. That's not his point over here. The point with idol worshippers is that it's their fault. It's their choice. It's a sin. He's only using it as an analogy, that the statement of Moshe doesn't predetermine that anybody should worship idols. But it's a reality. It's a truth. God knows that there will be a time when Rishayim will emerge, and that's what they'll do. See, this is also tied in with a different chapter, which we're not taking up now. This is not the end of the story, so to speak, because the Rambam does raise this whole question about God's knowledge and free will. And he provides an answer. And the essence of that answer is to show that knowing that something is going to happen is not akin to being the cause. That's an important point. The Rambam addresses a chapter to that. And we have tapes on the subject, which Jay gave Shurim on this years ago. Now, I'm not going into all of that now, what the issues are. For our purposes, we're basing ourselves on the conclusion. The mistake that a person has when he raises the question, well, how does God know? If God knows, then God's knowledge must be perfect, and therefore it must happen. So you can no longer say that it's possible not to happen. That's the line of the question. But the basic answer that the Rambam gives is that the whole question is a mistake. I'm giving the answer in general terms, but you really have to study it carefully. But he's really saying, and this is a very big yesod, that the cause of many philosophical problems that people have with regard to God, issues about God, are based upon projection, human projection. That we just have a sense of how things are, and we assume that that's the way it has to be, and we can project elements that are pertinent to the human situation onto God. For example, knowledge. In the area of knowledge, we said just because you know something is going to happen, doesn't mean you're the cause. For example, let's say a weatherman, a meteorologist. All right, so the science is not a perfect science, they'll acknowledge it. But let's say that it really improved tremendously and they could predict the weather for a whole week or 2 weeks and with pinpoint accuracy. So now they're telling you that 5 days from now it's going to be a thunderstorm, what the temperature will be and so forth. So they know. Does that mean that they're the cause? So just because you know what's going to happen doesn't mean that you're the cause of what's going to happen. But the answer to that is, though, that what enables you to predict that it's going to happen? The only way that you can predict that it's going to happen with accuracy is because what is going to happen is already predetermined. The causes are already in existence. And man can come to conclusions and make predictions only because he's aware of the causes. If you know the causes, that's the study of science. The person knew all the causes, all the factors that go into the equation, so he could predict exactly when a certain person is going to die. Or you can predict when a person is going to get a disease. If you know all the factors, the genetics, obviously the amount of information you would need is beyond the scope of any individual. But in that case, whenever you can predict with absolute accuracy, it means to say that what's happening is a result of certain causes. It's not a magical thing. And you are able to make the prediction because you understand. You study the causes. But it means to say that the event in question is one which has causes. The causes are already there. So it has to happen. Otherwise, you couldn't predict it with accuracy. It must happen because these causes must lead to that result. That basically is a major element of the Rambam's breakdown. So therefore, when we say that God knows everything that's going to happen, and it's accurate, it's absolutely accurate, you can't say that it's an if you maintain that God knows something and yet it doesn't have to happen, so then you're saying that God's knowledge is imperfect. Can't be. So if God knows something, it must happen. So if it must happen, so then apparently the causes must be out there. It must come to this conclusion because the causes are there. There the Rambam says you're making a big mistake because you're projecting your way of knowing onto the Creator's way of knowing. The Creator does not know by virtue of the causes. The Creator has a, let's put it this way, a completely different way of knowing. Put it in a very rough description. The mistake is the only form of knowledge that we can relate to is knowledge through the causes. And we assume that the Creator is the same. But the Creator is, we don't know the essence of God. We don't know the knowledge of God. He and his existence and his knowledge are all one. And the Creator knows. But the fact that the Creator knows is not the cause of the event. The cause of the event is the element of human choice of freedom, that man's will is not predetermined by any other forces outside the will. And that's basically his resolution of the issue. Just to review, I think this removes the problem. Because when we talk about the meteorologist knowing an outcome, it's the fact that he knows and his knowledge is accurate, and what he knows must happen, doesn't mean that he's the cause of what's happening. Obviously, no one's going to claim that. He has nothing to do with causing it. The only problem is that the fact that he knows it, it's only possible for him to know it because his only way of knowing is through causes. So therefore, the causes must be there. Because man can only know through the causes. He has no other way of knowing. But the knowing per se is not the cause. If we were to assume then that there's a different way of knowing outside of the causes, so then there'd be no problem. If there was a being that could know everything that's going to happen without referring to the causes, a different way of knowing, so then you'd have no problem with the idea that God knows what's going to happen, but God is not the cause. Your will is the cause. Now, with man, it's an impossibility. That's why we can't predict what people are going to do. Because we have no access. The cause is the other person's choice. We have no way of knowing. Because we only know through the causes. Now, that's basically, it's necessary at this point. Because when you're discussing this issue, when the Rambam's resolution is saying that don't think that when Moshe said that Jews will arise and worship idols, that there was any predetermination. God knows. God knows the future. But each and every person had freedom. And this, the right he brings from that is that it will be the same as saying a person knows the situation in human society. There'll never be a poor person eliminated from this society. Now he turns to the issue of the Egyptians. Kol echad v'echad me'osan ha'mitrim ba'meirim l'Israel. Each and every one of the Egyptians who were evil to Israel. Evildoers. Ilu lo rotsa lahara lehem. If he didn't want to be evil to them, harshus piyado. He had the control. He had, nobody was compelled. There was no compulsion. This was a matter of their own choice. Shlo gazar al ish yadua. God did not decree on any particular individual. Ella hodio, but he informed them. Shesof zaro asid lishtabed b'yaristalab. He just informed them of what's going to happen in the future, that this is going to happen. But he didn't decree it. Uchar marnu, and we've already said, she'en koch v'adam leida, eich yeida ha'kadosh baruch hu dvar ha'masid l'yos. Now he refers back to the answer which I just explained. We've already explained that we have no way of knowing how God knows. Because he's getting back to that question. The question comes up over here. That God knows it's going to happen. So if God knows it's going to happen, that knowledge must be perfect. So therefore, it must happen. He's saying, no, that's not a problem, because it's only a problem if you assume that God knows by virtue of the causes. And therefore, the causes have to be in effect. Thus, there's no freedom. No, we've already explained that. That's how man knows. But you can't compare your knowledge to God's knowledge. That is to say, a person has to recognize the tremendous gap, infinite gulf that exists between our abilities, our knowledge, and the Creator. The inability to comprehend that is the fundamental mistake of most of the philosophies that people have pertaining to religious issues. This is the yisod. It's one of the yisodos, one of the foundations of the Rambam and the Maura, in terms of solving a lot of problems. The Rambam is saying that with regard to the enslavement of the Jews, it wasn't a divine decree. God did not, it wasn't a gzera. A gzera would mean a divine decree. That is to say that God, in that case, would set up the emotional causes, and it must happen because of the causes. If that is the case, then you have a problem. So apparently that was the Havamina. It appears that this is something which is decreed. And Rambam's answer, if it was decreed, of course, then it would be a problem. That how could God judge them? According to this, every Egyptian had free will with regard to the issue of the Jews. Had every Egyptian chosen the good, not to be evil, then it would never have, the enslavement would never have happened in Egypt. Well, it could have happened elsewhere. It's interesting. Theoretically, not, and realistically, according to the way Rambam says it, there was nothing that determined, there was no predetermination that the Egyptians had to enslave the Jews. Every Egyptian was free. Thus, according to that, the Egyptians of their own accord could have refrained from punishing. Yeah, well, that's the whole idea. The enslavement. No, it was. The enslavement was not permitted. It was not justifiable. And in addition, they didn't just enslave them. It was all part of a plan to break them down. The affliction, the makos, the punishments, etc. The hard labor, everything they did to them. But according to this, the Egyptians could have avoided it. Now, what would have happened in terms of the plan of the Jewish people? Whatever. It's not necessary for us to know at this point. It's irrelevant. But God knew what would happen. And thus, God told them that they're going to be enslaved in a land which is not theirs. Right, the Ramban takes up this issue in his commentary on the Torah. The Gam, the Sagai, Asher Yavodu, Dananaki. Alright, the Ramban gives different interpretations. The words for Gam, and also include the kingdoms of the four exiles, which will be judged for having enslaved Israel. That's the language of Rashi. This is by way of the simple meaning of Scripture, the verse is stating, quote, just as I decreed exile and affliction for your children on account of sin, so will I bring judgment upon the nation that will enslave them for the violence they will do to them. And the correct meaning of the word v'gam appears to me, says Ramban, to be as follows. Even though I have decreed that your children be strangers in a land not their own, and they shall enslave them and afflict them, I will nevertheless judge the nation that will enslave them for what they will do to them. And they will not be exonerated for having done my decree. Here we can see a completely different approach. The Rambam's entire point was to eliminate the idea of a decree. Once you say there's no decree, then it becomes relatively easy to resolve the problem. Key word is decree. The Ramban is explaining it, that even though I have decreed this, so that's the biggest thing to do. You decreed it, so why are they being punished? And then he gives his reason. The reason for this is, as Kripke states, I am jealous for Jerusalem and for Zion with a great jealousy, and I am very displeased with the nations that are at ease, but I was but a little displeased, and they helped for evil. He quotes another pasuk to express this idea. I was angry with my people, I profaned my inheritance, and gave them into your hands. So God is saying that he punished the Jews, and exiled them, and put them in the hands of the Gentiles. But you showed them no mercy. Upon the aged have they heavily laid the yoke. Such was the case with the Egyptians, who increased the evil. They threw the children of the Israelites into the river, embittered their lives, and they intended to eradicate their name from memory. This is the meaning of the expression, I will judge. Done anochi. I.e., I will bring them to judgment to determine whether they did as was decreed upon them, or if they increased the evil inflicted upon them. It is this principle which Yisro stated, which said, for it is the thing wherein they acted presumptuously, upon them. It's a very interesting interpretation. Because that's where he says, now I know that God is the true God, kibad dev rosh hazadu alayhem. It's a reference to the Egyptians. The Midrashic interpretation is that they were punished with water, just in the same way that they sinned against the Jews, they were punished in the same way. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying, but the Davarash is underlying in the matter that they, the Egyptians, were vicious and cruel to them. Meaning to say that they deserved to be punished. That's what Ramban is taking it. It was their presumptuousness that brought upon the Egyptians the great punishment, which utterly destroyed them. And this principle is also expressed in the verse, for you knew that they dealt proudly, haughtily against them. Then he quotes the Rambam, he refers to him as the rabbi. He quotes what we just read, that it had not been decreed on any particular Egyptian that he was to afflict the Israelites. And If anyone of all of those who perpetrated evil against Israel had not wanted to do it, he had the liberty to do so, since the decree was not directed at any specific person. Then the Ramban goes on and says, but to me, the Rambam's words are not reconciled with fact. Even if the Holy One, blessed be He, were to decree that any individual among all the nations should do to the Israelites evil in such and such a manner, and this specific individual fulfilled his decree with alacrity, with zealousness, he has the merit of fulfilling a divine commandment. He's saying that the Rambam didn't have to make that step and say that it wasn't a decree. Because the Rambam's assumption was that if it's a decree, so then he can't be punished. What sense is there in the Rambam's words? If a king were to command that the inhabitants of a certain country do a particular deed, he who is slack and throws the matter upon others offends and sins against himself, while he who does it wins the king's favor. So therefore, there's nothing wrong if the Egyptians would have done that which was decreed. And this is all the more so since Scripture states, and also that nation that made slaves of them, which clearly implies that the entire Egyptian nation was to enslave them. And they came to Egypt out of their own free will. Instead, the reason for the punishment of the Egyptians is, as I have written above. Our rabbis already mentioned this matter when they said in Shmos Rabbah, this may be likened to a lord who told his son that he should work for a certain person who should not cause him any suffering. So he went and worked for him. And even though he worked for him without payment, the master did not cease causing him suffering. When the Lord finally was reconciled with the son, he decreed death to those who caused his son suffering. Similarly, the Holy One, blessed be He, decreed that Israel be in servitude in Egypt. But the Egyptians overwhelmed them and enslaved them by force. So the Holy One, blessed be He, said the Holy One, blessed be He, you should have used them as servants who would do your needs. I was but a little displeased, and they helped for evil as they increased. That's not what God wanted. God just wanted them to be enslaved. Egyptians came along and did much, much worse. That's the quotation from Midrash Rabbah. Now, it is clear that throwing Hebrew children into the river was not included in the decree, and they should enslave them and afflict them. But this would result in their complete destruction. Similarly, that which the Egyptians said at first, come let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, is not part of servitude or affliction. Besides, they themselves increased the degree of affliction, as Scripture testifies, and they made their lives bitter with hard service. It is this which Scripture states in the following verse, and he saw our affliction and our toil and our oppression. No one understands that a person who, on the new year, has been inscribed and sealed for a violent death. The bandits who kill him will not be guiltless, because they fulfill that which had been decreed against them. That wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will be sought for murder. However, when a decree issues from the mouth of a prophet, there are different laws concerning one who fulfills it. If he heard it and he wishes to fulfill the will of his Creator as decreed, there is no sin upon him for doing so. On the contrary, it is accounted to him as a merit, just as it is said concerning King Jehu, because you have done well in executing that which is right in my eyes, and has done unto the house of Ahab according to all that was in my heart, your sons of the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel. That is to say that Ahab was a Russia, and God wanted him to be destroyed, and Jehu carried out the will of God. However, if he heard the command and killed him out of his personal hatred, or in order to take his wealth, he is subject to punishment, for his intention was to sin, and it is accounted to him as a transgression. This is not so simple. The same act now it depends purely on the kavana, on the intention of the one doing it. But basically, he's saying that if an individual is aware of a command of the Prophet from God, which is that a certain person should be punished or suffer some type of harm, so then it all depends what his motivation is. If he's acting purely for the sake of heaven, not for any personal motivation, as in the case, for example, of Pinchas and Zimri, the whole situation, so then, to the contrary, he's doing a great thing, he's doing a mitzvah. But if he's doing it for a different purpose, and certainly if he does not limit himself just to the decree of God, but it adds additional suffering, which wasn't called for, so then he's liable. He quotes a case pertaining to Nebuchadnezzar, Sancheriv. Quote, it says concerning Sancheriv, Israel is a scattered sheep. The lions have driven him away. First the king of Asher has devoured him. And last, Nebuchadnezzar, Melchizedek, king of Babel. Therefore, thus said the Eternal, behold, I will punish the king of Babylon and his land, as I have punished the king of Assyria. This is proof that the king of Assyria was punished because of the evil he did to Israel. And he says something very interesting. Now, Nebuchadnezzar heard that the prophets unanimously called upon him to destroy Jerusalem. And he and all his people were commanded to do this by word of the prophet, as it is written. Behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, says the Eternal, that's God, and I will send unto Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and I will bring them against this land and against the inhabitants, and I will utterly destroy them. And it's further written, I will give this city into the hands of the Chaldeans and into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and they shall set the city on fire. Concerning the sanctuary itself, the prophet said, I will make this house like Shiloh, means it will be destroyed. So he says the Chaldeans knew that it was the command of God, as Nebuzaradan, who was the chief military leader, said to Yirmiyahu, the Eternal by God pronounced this evil upon this place, and the Eternal has brought it and done according as he spoke, because you sinned against the Eternal. So he was aware of the fact that this was God's will. Yet despite this, the Chaldeans were all punished in the end. This was because of two reasons. First, Nebuchadnezzar also intended to destroy the entire land in order to increase his authority, as it is written concerning him. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease. In other words, that's the first factor, that he wasn't doing it for the sake of the divine command, but he was doing it for personal gain, personal reason. Rambam brings further proofs to establish his point. Then further down the page, he says, and there was yet another reason for punishment in the case of the king of Babylon, i.e. for his having added to the decree and having exceedingly perpetrated evil against Israel. As it is said concerning him, I was angry with my people, I profaned my inheritance and gave them into thy hand, but you showed no mercy. Upon the aged, you heavily laid the yoke. So these are the two factors. The two factors are that if something is decreed by God against a certain people, and another individual moves to carry out, now, even if what he's doing is destruction and even involving murder, if that was the decree, so then this person could either be doing something great, could be eligible for a reward, or it could be sin and he'll be punished. The main factor is if the person is doing it purely for the L'shem Shemayim, the sake of heaven, and he's not doing it for any personal motive at all. If he's doing it for a personal motive, even if he doesn't exceed, even if it's not excessive, beyond the degree, So then he's a Rasha. And secondly, that if he does not go beyond the scope of the decree. So in the case of Egypt, for example, if the decree was enslavement, and that's it, just to be enslaved. And they increased, and in terms of the harshness, in terms of the pain, in terms of attempting to wear them out, to drive them out, whatever it is, so that's not what the decree was. So basically, that's the explanation that the Rambam is giving. It's not a question. It's not a question anymore that how could God punish the Egyptians when that was his decree? He's saying that had they stuck to the decree, and apparently had they done so because they wanted to carry out the divine decree, then you wouldn't have this. But clearly, they went way beyond that which was decreed, and that was a result of their own wickedness and their own evil, and for that, they deserve to be punished. It seems to me that on the basis of what the Ramban himself is saying, I mean, this would be a good answer, this would solve the problem, but I'm missing a fact over here. Because the Ramban himself has said that, let's say on Rosh Hashanah, that person is decreed for death in terms of God's judgment. If somebody else comes along and kills him because he hates this person, that person will not be exonerated. The person will not be able to argue when they have him in court if the person should discover that he was marked for destruction anyways. No, because that has nothing to do with your action. Your action is pure evil. So even if you kill an individual who is deserving of that, but in your framework, it's murder. Because you didn't know. That's the first category. The first category is, if you don't know, and you kill the person because you have personal motivations, the fact that that person was deserving of death is irrelevant. The second case, however, he's saying is where a person heard the command of a prophet. And once he heard the command of the prophet, so now he's acting on the basis of that command. He's aware and he's acting. That's what he points out in the case of Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar, that they knew. That's what he said to Yirmiyahu, that he knew that this was the divine decree. He was now carrying out the divine decree. Now the Ramban says in such a case, he shouldn't be punished. But that depends. If a person is truly carrying out the divine decree, he's the messenger, so to speak, by which it will be carried out, then he won't be punished. To the contrary, then it's a mitzvah. But then you got to be very, very careful. And again, there are two factors that will determine it. A, that there's no personal motivation at all. No personal benefit to him. B, that it has to be exactly the proportion, exactly. And if there's any change, any addition, that's another sign that it's coming out of the evil of his heart. It's not coming out of his, it's got to be true love of God. A lot of people think they're God's messengers on earth. They fight religious wars, and in their own mind, they're convinced that they're doing it for the glory of God, but that's because they're totally disordered. So those are the two factors. Then he takes that as a model and goes back to the case of the Egyptians, and he shows that they turned it against the Jews, that they weren't acting to fulfill the will of God, and that's clearly seen by the extent of what they have on a sock molo, let's deal wisely with them, and God had only decreed that they should be enslaved. That's it. And they went way above and beyond that. And that's that they were punished because what they did to the Jews was Zadon Alayhem. Here's the question. The answer of the Ramban would seem that if they merely had limited themselves to enslaving the Jews, as the decree was, and had not gone beyond that, and they did it for the proper reason, then they wouldn't have been punished. But indeed, there was excess. But the Ramban says that this analysis, that what was the person's motive and did he go to excess, is only in a case where he knew of the decree, he heard the prophet. But what is he saying? That the Egyptians knew this? The Egyptians knew about the breastplate of Sarum? They knew the prophecy? There's no indication whatsoever. He himself doesn't even mention that. So therefore, according to his own premise, then even though God may have decreed that a certain person deserves to die, you don't know that, and then you just kill him because you don't like him. But the fact that he was deserving of death is not going to help you. In your framework, it's murder. Thus, we have to treat, it would seem, you have to treat the case of the Egyptians as a case that doesn't matter, because the Egyptians, unless you say the Egyptians knew about this, it'd be very, very difficult to say that the Egyptians knew about it. Because if that's the case, the Egyptians knew about it. And on a certain level, they were doing it with the idea that this is what God wanted. So then why would Paro say to Moshe, Mi Hashem, Hashem who's God? He's denying God completely. He should have said, this is what God decreed. I'm carrying out the decree. Then Moshe could have argued that that's not what it means. And so on and so forth. It doesn't seem at all that they had any awareness. Why would they have an awareness? How would they get this awareness? And again, if you read the story, you don't see any indication. Because then they could have at least defended themselves. We thought we're doing the right thing. Moshe could have rebuked them. He could go into excess. He could rebuke them that you're not doing it for the right reasons, whatever. It seems that the major disagreement with the Rambam is not on the philosophical idea behind the Rambam. As we said, that God knows the future. The fact that God knows something is going to happen doesn't have any implication. Doesn't mean that there's no free will. That's not what's bothering the Ramban. He's not questioning that. What's bothering him is that the Rambam saw fit to learn that there's no decree. Why? Apparently, because if you say it's a decree, what caused the Rambam to take that approach? Why did the Rambam have to explain it that way? Because if there was a decree, so then it wouldn't be just. So therefore, you learn that God's telling you the future. God knows the future, but it's not a decree. The Ramban came to challenge that notion and to establish the idea that even if it is a decree, it does not mean that there can't be punishment. We can learn, that's what he's trying to show you, we can learn that it's a decree, and still, they are subject to punishment. He then proceeds to show that even if something is a decree, it doesn't necessarily mean that the person who carries out the decree is going to be exonerated. So he shows you what the factors are in the case of the Egyptians. What were the factors in the case of the Egyptians that warranted that they be punished? Because clearly they went way above and beyond that which was decreed. He shows that for many cases, and it's a beautiful idea, that even where there is a decree, that in and of itself does not mean the one carrying it out will not be punished. There is a concept of carrying out the divine decree in a manner which will not only won't you be punished, but it's a mitzvah. So he's trying to establish. But there are the factors. The factors have to be that you know that it's a divine decree. Your only motivation is for the sake of the divine decree, no personal benefit, and it's carried out exactly in accordance with the divine decree. You can't add to it. And basically what he's showing is that this was, then he tells you this was the decree. This is what they did. So they distorted the whole thing. The only thing that I don't understand at this point is, why doesn't he deal with the issue, though? Why can't he simply say that this is like the case of the God, that God decreed that a person is deserving of death and somebody else kills him? But that person who kills him doesn't know about the decree. He did it for his own reasons. Why doesn't the Ramban mention, in addition to everything else, that they had no way of knowing that this was a divine decree? Because that would be, it would seem to be the most fundamental answer of all. He says that this, he He said this wasn't the decree. The decree only called for a certain type of enslavement. And they went way above me on that. But if you have another factor in his favor, and that is to say that they did not hear it from the prophet. Nobody told them about that. So everything they did was purely a result of their own evil. And one of the primary conditions where a person carries out the divine decree correctly is that he knows it's the divine decree. Thus, the Ramban has a very profound idea. We can understand his idea. It's important to know the context, what he was objecting to, and what he was trying to achieve. He was trying to maintain that you can learn that this is a decree. And indeed, if you take that approach, and then the question is how can they be punished, it brings a whole new idea to the fore. The whole subject matter. And you have all those other cases, etc. We're just left with a little bit of a difficulty over here. We understand now the answer to this situation, to the case of Mitzrayim. As I said, I don't understand, though, why he's forced to emphasize the departure, the distortion, much more. And he doesn't mention at all the most primary condition, that the one who's doing it has to do it for the sake of the decree. Thus, he must know that this is a divine decree. Doesn't seem that there's any evidence that the Egyptians knew about this, that they were destined to be enslaved. Let's sum up over here for the time being. We gained a lot from studying Ramban over here. His basic ideas and the whole philosophy about divine punishment and cases where a person is fulfilling the will of God and so forth. His basic objective over here was to refute his understanding of the Rambam, that the Rambam would not learn that it's a decree, because if he learns it's a decree, then you're not going to have there's no justice. The Egyptians shouldn't be punished. His objective was to show that you can reconcile the idea of decree with punishment. And he went through all the cases and he showed that this is a case which the Egyptians deserved to be punished, because what they did was not in line with the decree and the excesses that they went into. Now, we're left with the question, why did the Ramban deal with the issue as to whether they could have possibly done it correctly, the decree, because they know the fundamental. And at this point, we don't have an answer. But nevertheless, we still gain tremendously from studying this Ramban. I've just been told that Rabbi Chaim gave a shiur on this particular topic, the Ramban, and he said, you must infer from the words of the Ramban that the prophecy, the Nebuah of the Bisman of Sarm, was something which was public knowledge and universally known. And in addition, he went further and said that any type of prophecy along these lines is something which becomes universally known. So that pretty much confirms what was bothering us, that we understand this from Ban, you have to assume that the Egyptians were aware of the prophecy. Otherwise, you can't even make a case. And you can't argue that they're guilty because they exceeded the prophecy, when, in fact, they never knew the prophecy. However, the questions that we raise, that is, if you read the Pesukim themselves, there's no indication that they were conscious of the prophecy or that that was part of their intention. In Shemos, it gives you the series of causes that generation died, as long as the generation of Yosef, the brothers, was around. And then a new king arose that didn't know Yosef, and that the Jews began to increase and spread. And then the king said, "Have a sakmalo," still wisely with them. Doesn't seem, it's mentioning all the other factors, that in spite of everything that the Jews had done for them, they turned against the Jews. But the fact that they were on any level trying to use this as a justification, it doesn't come out. And then Moshe goes to Paro, and he demands that God said to let the Jews go and serve me in the wilderness. He denies that he even knows God. Who is God? Why should I listen to him? So then, if you don't listen to him on this, so why would you listen to him that the Jews deserve to be punished? I mean, you would think that he would argue rather that he's fulfilling the divine command. He doesn't mention that. So therefore, from the story itself, it's very difficult to understand that the mystery, on any level, we're conscious of the decree and we're seeking to carry it out. Bear in mind also, the Ramban himself doesn't mention it, and that's strange. Why did he mention that point?